It's not especially understanding what it is, but feeling the music. And you know, in Hawaiian music, I think there's a lot of feeling that cannot be explained, so that's why it's important.
We the voices behind the faith of the Hawaiian nation, the Hawaiian race, rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e, e ala e. We the voices behind the face, the Hawaiian nation, Hawaiian race, rise for justice, the day has come for all our people to stand as one. E ala e. We the warriors born to live on what the land did she can give. Defend our birthright to be free. Give our children liberty.
Aloha kakahiaka. This is Maka'ala and Mauna Kea doing Pilikia or Pono. Yes, folks, it's 7 a.m. and we're both up. What are you doing? Get up, get up, get up. E ala e. So this is a series of conversations between Mauna Kea Trask and myself. Mauna Kea Trask giving you the facts, me giving you the opinions and giggles. We decided to do this show, actually. We were asked to do something. And Mauna Kea, thank you so much for being willing to do this. This is busting a little bit into your workday because you start so early, and we appreciate you. We appreciate you. Anyway.
Thank you so much, and I'm sorry I'm late.
Yeah, no kidding. What's the deal with that? Anyway, okay.
I broke my tooth, man. I was watching the Taylor Swift extravaganza, and those tarot chips are exceedingly hard. Busted my wisdom tooth. I'm not as smart as I thought I was.
Jeez. You don't need them. You don't need them. I had the dentist tell me about 30 years ago, you don't need these. You never needed these. Turns out I kind of did. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Are you okay?
Totally fine. Okay. Yeah, I had to stay in the gathering place one more time. So I'm in my office in the clouds right now.
Yes, you sound a little tunnel-y. Okay. Thank you for making your commitment nonetheless. So we talked about, we do talk, folks, in case you think that we don't, in case you think this is totally shooting from the hip, it's not completely shooting from the hip. We talk, folks, about what we want to do on the show, and there is a sort of continuity. We do think about it. And today's subject, it's kind of old and yet not. Old and new again, new and yet not. I don't mean to be mysterious, but it's an issue on our radar screen right now, but it's a matter that old Hawaiians knew how to do and do well, and frankly, in some ways, do better than we're doing today. But it is Mauna, about the value of the natural resources. At its very essence, it is, do we understand the resources that we have been given and our responsibility in gosh, I hate to say using them, but it is kind of using them and managing them. We're going to talk about reservoirs. And I think you all know that all of most of our listeners know on KKCR anyway, know that I have an opinion about reservoirs and the preservation of them, if they're at all preservable, and maybe even the restoration of them, and maybe even the construction of some. But I asked Mona if he could talk a little bit about reservoirs as it relates to development, as it relates to the old days, as it relates to today. Is that what we agreed on, or have I gone completely out of my mind?
Oh, no, yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. I'm still on track. Allowed to drive down the road again once again today. Okay, so I don't know where you want to start with this. We didn't actually have a script prepared for this. We never do. But what do you want to say? Where do you want to start with this?
Well, let's start with, I always like to start with the Hawaiians. I mean, what we did traditionally and customarily, and how we looked at, reservoirs, not particularly reservoirs, because I don't think Hawaiians had built reservoirs like how we think of them today, but definitely water diversion, stream diversion, how they utilized water and managed water.
I wonder if we could consider a lo'i a kind of a reservoir.
No, you're right. Yeah, I think you can. Because like a reservoir, hold on, I'm trying to find the
The notes that he had, uh-huh.
I got the notes, but I forgot what statute it is. Jeez. Oh.
Yeah, course. I don't think that's critical to most people, but okay.
Well, like whatever. Does anyone know what the legal definition of reservoir is?
You build a pond, you hold the water in it, then you use the water for something. Yeah,
that's yeah, right.
Webster and me are good buddies. Yeah.
How you said in the beginning. We're not smart. We're no more common sense.
It's true.
Okay, so reservoir is any basin that contains or will contain water impounded by a dam, including a pertinent works. So yeah, lo'i. I think lo'i acted as a reservoir, not necessarily for drinking, but for its purpose, right?
Yeah, I mean it stored water in a sense. Now we know that Taro wants moving water, but. And it might not have the berm might not have been called a dam, but mm-hmm. it's a pond for storing water. You certainly retained water.
Yeah, I guess fish ponds, right, to an extent.
Yeah,
that kind of like, but getting into it though, I think so Hawaiians, and you can look at this. I'm water. Okay, as I jump around, Hawaii is a very beautiful place. It's very wet, it's very lush, but calorically, when the first Hawaiians landed here, it was largely devoid of like plant calories, right, vegetables. It was all birds and whatever was in the ocean, because you can't eat iliahi, you can't eat ohelehua. Like Hawaiians brought kalo, they brought ulu, they brought these plants that could be cultivated and consumed. So, and you can't grow plants without water. And all the water goes into the streams, it goes into the aquifers, and then that's it. It just leaches out into the ocean. So Hawaiians performed extensive water diversion and water works. And because of it, are recognized by its complexity and sophistication. They were like the engineers, the most sophisticated engineers in Polynesia.
They were copying the systems from whence they came, right? So whatever they had before they voyaged, they were copying those systems that had been successful.
Correct. But I think because Hawaii in general, is the topography is much different than other parts of Polynesia. I think we have larger land masses. We're not really atollish. We're close to the Marquesas, but I think the scale with which they did it in Hawaii was much larger. And so, because they're kind of younger islands, right? They're bigger.
And you see the pictures in the books now, even social media. Some of the images, even in Carlos Andrade's book about Haena, you see the images of what the land looked like. The old images of Hanalei, which we consider to be so wet and so lush now, it didn't have a whole lot of small plants in it. It had a few scattered trees, and that was pretty much it. There wasn't a lot of vegetation.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's a barren place. And you know, you delete all the albizia and guinea grass on Kauai, you're not left with much, right? I mean, at this point. So anyway, they did extensive water diversions. And this is, and you can go Kalalau, you can still see it. And they're still used today, Waimea, like you said, Hanalei. And so if you look at it, and there's a famous chant. It's called the Waters of Kane, and it always comes up when you're talking about, when you're having the water discussion. And basically what it does is, following the Hawaiian pattern of chants, it asks, it's like a question and answer format, and it discusses and asks and discusses where the waters of Kane are. And Kane was the god of fresh water, who along with Kanaloa, In legends, they went to each island and they created springs and directed rivers and everything. And so they talk about the waters of Kane being above and below, the in the sky, under the ground, in the streams, all around. And which is true, you know. And I always like to look at Native Hawaiian chants and pule and just recognize the science of it all. It's just tremendously accurate as far as, you know, the hydrologic cycle, right? It's not very mystical, magical, in the sense of making things up.
Well, and if you look at where they did divert and how they diverted, even in contemporary times, if you look at those locations, in contemporary science, not that one is better or worse, but they work, they're accurate, they're in the right place, they do the right thing, they move the water from A to B in a fashion that's most productive.
Correct. And with the idea to minimize negative impact, like they were extreme developers, but they developed correctly, let's say. Because there was no choice. If they didn't develop correctly, it wouldn't work, which meant they would die. And so in the Waters of Kane, what I like about it the most, and what I think is missed when it's discussed, is the purpose of it. Not only the purpose of the water diversions, but what is the purpose of water itself? And so in the final stanza, it says, and I'll just read the English portion of it. One question I ask of you, where flows the waters of Kane? Deep in the ground, in the gushing spring, in the ducts of Kane and Kanaloa, a wellspring of water to drink, a water of magic power, the water of life. Life, oh, give us this life. And so that third to last line, Hewai puna, hewai e inu, a wellspring of water to drink, inu. So when you're looking at this, the Hawaiians were very much about living, like surviving. And so the point of water and Kane and Kanaloa and the magical properties of it was to drink. It was to consume. And that's what was magic about it. It was not to leave untouched. It was not to preserve for like abstract concepts of whatever. It was to use, but it was to use it correctly, right? And famously, like the kapu system, I mean, law, kanawai, is water, right? That's the fundamental principle of everything. And you didn't go malka and shishi because you would get, you know, the penalty was death, so you wouldn't pollute the water. But you would very much use it. And so when we're talking, bringing it back to reservoirs, there are about 48 reservoirs currently in the Hawaii, on Kauai, in DNR's dam safety management system. And they're all old 19th, early 20th century sugar reservoirs and dams. And you know, that's what they are. That is the infrastructure we have. And ever since Koloko in 2006, which you are very familiar with, the state has been on a decommissioning program, and which I don't think, you know, these are old dams. They're all earthen. They're just, you know, like they're a dam that a giant child would build. They're just, you know.
That's a great image. The Tonka truck, the Tonka
exactly.
truck reference.
Like you put the hose and dig a wall.
Yeah.
But then, they're a tremendous. You can't build them nowadays. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, it's like Cromwell. It's like Doris Duke's house. It's beautiful to go visit, but there's no way you could build that house now. It's impossible. And so it's the existing infrastructure that we have, which itself was repurposed largely, maybe not largely, but frequently repurposed existing Hawaiian irrigation systems, right?
Yes, like in Lahaina. So Lahaina is a great example, and other areas following natural water paths. So where's the water running? I mean, the Hawaiians, or the sugar farmers, the plantations, they weren't going to fight nature. They knew there was no reason, there was no way to buck it to try and make water go where it wouldn't go. So they took the drainage areas and gathered the water and contained it there. I mean, it wasn't, if you look at development and you look at the locations of development, if we would develop and build within the parameters, I don't want to say confines, but within the parameters of the land, we would stop fighting it and work with it. And reservoirs, to me, is a great example of that. Even though it's not ancient, I know for a fact that some of the locations, well, I know for a fact in my own head, that some of the locations of some of these reservoirs now that are being decommissioned followed path and work of much older diggers and planters than sugar folks.
Oh, definitely. And that's what it is. I mean, Hawaii, like you said, you can't, there's a contour to the land, right? It's all gravity flow. So you can move it here and there, but there are huge restrictions. And, these are the sugar infrastructure. It just exponentially expanded what the pre-contact Hawaiians did, and Hawaiians are very much involved in the sugar infrastructure as well. I mean, you know, you got Grow Farm, A&B, McBride. Those are the companies that we're familiar with. But there was also the McKee plantation, right? Kalakaua's venture in Kauai, like Kealia-ish. There was a lot of attempts everywhere. And it originally there was a lot of sugarcane companies. And like, I mean, capitalism, unregulated capitalism at that time, they acquired each other and they just grew. And so what we saw and what we're familiar with in the 80s and 90s were the last, you know, the big five. They're the last remaining giants. But there was a ton before. And so, I think what we're faced with today in our discussion this morning is, what do we do? Is it wise to decommission all these reservoirs where under Article 11, Section 3 of the Constitution, the state shall conserve and protect ag lands and promote diversified ag? I mean, we all love farming, which you can't do without water. And like you said, if you look at, if it wasn't for these reservoirs and if it's not for expansive irrigation systems, what are we left with? And I think we're left with where, like old Kuleana maps, which if you look, all the Kuleana lots are oddly shaped in really odd and out of the way places. I mean, they're in gullies and valleys. and they're not habitable currently. You know what I mean? Like, you'd have to do a lot of damage to get up into Wainiha to go find the Kulianas,
yeah,
or
yeah,
Hulia'ia Valley, Niumala, right? Like, and so what we, and right now, this idea of returning to a pre-contact paradise, I mean, if you remove Waitā in Koloa, you wipe out Koloa. I mean, we fundamentally changed the topography of our islands, and our habitation patterns right now are sugar. I mean, all of Kauai is a spider web of roads leading from one plantation mill to another, and that's, you know, if and when we ever talk about traffic, that's one of the reasons why we have such bad traffic, is because Kapa to Lihui is from the, you know, you're following old railroad lines, and from one plantation, one mill to the next, and which is why it doesn't make sense.
It had nothing to do with getting to the airport.
No.
yeah. I mean, but you know that I remember, because I think most folks know that I spent a good part of my early adulthood in California, and in Northern California, specifically in Marin County, there was a very well thought out and planned intricate system of railroads that originated for the purpose of delivering wood pulp for paper mills. Matter of fact, many of the features there, creeks and rivers and streams and stuff, are all named for paper. But that train system, that rail system, there were some smart people. Unfortunately, they did not prevail. But there were some smart people that said, let's use those paths and keep a train, and so that not everything is dependent upon the car. And had they done that, it would have been very efficient and effective, and they wouldn't have, and they wouldn't now be thinking, how do we get a train from here to there? Because they would have known. So the same thing's true with reservoirs. In my opinion, we're going to be looking at storage, how to store all this water. I mean, I know that when Waipa was going through its master plan, the county water department was requiring this extensive and expensive water system, water piping system. Excuse me. And what Waipa argued, and successfully so, was, no, we don't need to do that. We will just install a storage system. So they have a large storage facility there. It's not a dam, it's a tank, but it's the same thing. So
yeah,
you're either going to store it by repairing, you know, look at what you used to have and what, you know, the transport of it looked like. What was the design? What was the path? So for Kalihiwai, for example, which is my pet project because it's the last of the North Shore, it's the last reservoir we really have, and it's not that bus up, it's not that broken. It does need some repair, but it's not that bad, and it's in a place that is still possible, still amenable. And that water is specifically designated for ag. That water will support, could support, the Kilauea Ag Park, in which we've all invested a whole lot of our tax money, whether people know it or not. That's critical to the resilience and health of the wider community, and the water that they are using to grow lettuce right now is our potable, drinkable water. To me, that ought to be criminal. That just ought to be criminal when you've got a perfectly good reservoir. Yes, it needs some repairs. It's not drastic. And I just think we need to stop sometimes and think, does this thing still serve a purpose? And if we're not sure, then, you know, pause. Give it a moment's thought. Because to me, the destruction of all of these reservoirs is just knee-jerk fear of liability after Coloco. I don't know why everybody's afraid of that happening again. There was a very specific set of circumstances that caused that to happen. Nature didn't just bust up that dam. That's not what happened.
No, so, absolutely. And I, you're 100% right. And Coloco has become that, you know, the excuse.
Yeah.
Because, and I think it's a couple things. One, you know, water is tremendously controversial, right? And it's really interesting, like you Waipa, there's not really a standard whereby if you follow this checklist politically, you'll be okay, right? If you, and basically, if you're a nonprofit Native Hawaiian organization, you can do much more than you know, like some kind of commercial development, and that's not a bad thing. They definitely should get it. It's a nonprofit Native Hawaiian organization, but I think that if you are not one of those, but you're nonetheless doing something positive, like you are for the Kalihiwai Ridge example, if you're a nonprofit homeowners association, you should look at it similarly, right? And if the action is benevolent, if you're doing good development, like Hawaiians did, and they are tremendously expensive. A lot of these are on state land. Because a lot of these reservoirs were leased, you know, these properties were leased by sugarcane companies. They didn't necessarily own everything. And government is always about doing the politically expedient thing so you can get reelected and spending and saving money appropriately. And these dams are huge liabilities, not only, you know, for damage to persons and property, but just financial liabilities. And so when Jimmy Pfluger, not nature, but when Jimmy Pfluger tried to turn Coloco into his own private jet ski recreational area, you're right, that was a bad thing. But when DHHL wants to decommission the reservoirs in Anahola and they use Coloco liability as a justification, I don't think that's well placed. And you know, like, because DHHL's not plugging up the outflows.
You're being right? Very kind. You're being very kind. That's just stupid. That has, there is no comparison at all. There is no comparison to some guy, I knew Jimmy, some guy who, you know, he had his plan. He was a developer. He had his stuff in his mind. I tell people, they go, what do you think? Well, he was a big guy. He was a large man. He liked to drive fast cars and he loved big equipment. And those were his Tonka trucks. He and I had that conversation one day. I said, you know, these are not all Tonka trucks. And I can drive it. It does this job, and I'm going to move that dirt over there because I can. And the same thing is happening now, where you're just thinking of the short term. You're just thinking of the thing in front of your face, and using whatever story you have or know to you know, get the result you want. And I think ignorance is so frustrating. I just, the Kalihiwai one is a fascinating example for me because it is privately owned, and the people that it's owned by the entire association. It's not one person. It's owned by it's a share, it's a common area. It's shared by all 180 lots. Every single landowner up there pays for its maintenance. I don't think people realize how simple that picture is up there. But they don't have a sense of responsibility because for the most part, I think there's only maybe four or five kama'aina up there. The rest of the people, there's some really good people up there, but they don't have the sense of kuleana. They don't have the sense of we have this responsibility of this water because we are part owners of it. They don't have that. What they see is what the government sees and what the government is telling them, which is the same thing in Anahola. it's the government that's telling DHHL this is a liability, and as long as everybody's spending public money, this is a risk, and we are not willing. The lawyers are all saying, no, we can't. You know, this is not a risk that we want to absorb. As long as I'm going to go on this soapbox, I better say this is Maka'ala and Manakea Trask, and this is Pilikia Opono. Keep KKCR off the hot seat here. But it's just, you have to think about the other guy, the downstream guy. You have to think about the guy growing the lettuce. Come on. He's going to feed you. You know, I'm going to have Yosh on the show pretty soon here again, because the Kilauea Ag Park is growing by leaps and bounds, and it's wonderful. It's doing really, really well. If you want veggies for dinner or fresh fish or whatever, go check them out. The store is open, and the food is good. It's cheaper. It's fresher. Carrots taste like carrots. I think we've forgotten what carrots are supposed to taste like. Anyway, all of that water is earmarked, in my story, my version of this story, for the Kilauea Ag Park. It absolutely is. But the conflict here in the reservoirs is, well, they were put in by the sugar plantation, and that's not historical, that's not cultural. And I'm separating it as to the use of the water. But the use of the water is to feed the people.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. So I think what we need to do is...
Yeah, do tell, Mana. What should we do? Because I tell you, I'm in this up to my earlobes, and I'm not getting very far with my lecture of, you know, you have to care about the wider community. You're part of a community. You're part of a place. And da-da-da-da-da-da. They just look at me and roll their eyes.
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, there's like some quote from some movie that I forgot, or I just may have made this up, but I don't think I did. But it's like you change the way you look at things, and the things you look at change. And it's kind of high-minded and trite, but it's true. Like, right now, we're still fighting a lot. And I always say something to the effect of this is, like, you know, we're still fighting against these we're looking for people to fight with. We're just scrapping constantly. And I don't know at this point if there's still ogres to fight, but I think a lot of our fights right now are windmills. Like, we have a lot of the revolutionaries and the crusaders at this point, it's almost like quixotic, you know? Like, we're roaming the land looking for beefs, and what are we fighting? We're fighting renewable energy, you know? We're fighting ag.
We're fighting just to fight.
Yeah, and 20th century monocrop ag wasn't good. I agree. I'm not saying sugar was virtuous. I mean, they took my nation. The government subsidy for sugar was, the down payment was the Hawaiian Kingdom, straight up. And so sugar, I mean, ag is always going to have to be subsidized by the government. Kilauea Ag Park, 100%. But we need to look at these things as assets, because that's how Hawaiians would look at them. I mean, Koloa, the first sugar plantation was Landing Company in Koloa. And that was a lease from Kamehameha III. I mean, if the kings and queens didn't allow that to happen, there would be no sugar. I mean, sugar predated Mahele, right? That's a fact. And the Hawaiians tried to get in on a hustle too, just like Hawaiians built hotels. You know, Kapwaiba built the Royal Hawaiian Hotel, and it was first located on Richards and Hotel Street. Like, it was a 4-star luxury resort. So, or 5, I don't know. But it was good, or it was fancy. So what we need to do right now is, like, what should we actually do something? Yes. And what does that need to be done? Well, we need to repair and maintain this infrastructure. And we need to do it, just if we think it was bad from 1835 to 1996, well, then let's do it good. We can refurbish this stuff and do it the right way. I mean, a reservoir, is it going to be expensive? Absolutely. But if and my criticism of a lot of environmental groups and conservation groups and certain portions of the Native Hawaiian community is, yeah, okay, there's a problem. I agree. And I worked with, I represented, and I was part of the problem for 10 years in county. But give me a solution. You know, you have a lot of hardworking people. We all know people at the county. We got friends and family that work county. And I think 90%+ of those people, they're not doing it for, no one in county is doing it for the money. Absolutely not. They're all underpaid. And they're all under-resourced. But they're trying to do the best they can with what they got in the time that God gave them, right? And so how do we work with these people? How do we get away from these, oh, you're bad because you're here, or you're bad because you do X, and say, okay, let's do something good together?
Isn't that what we call the public-private partnership? Everybody is touting this public-private partnership now because they're starting to realize what we always knew in ancient wisdom is that we can't do it all on our own, is that man is a piece of the puzzle, a partner in the puzzle. He doesn't rule the world, and neither does the water. It goes together. You work together. And government tends to say, no, we know we're smarter than you. We know better than you. We have access to more resources and wisdom than you. And then the academics are isolated and hole up in their towers saying, you know, well, we know the facts. We know the truth here. But they're not hooied up. They're not... Yes, I know that's not an adjective or adverb. They're not joining together to do it. Now, I have long, Mauna, you've heard me say this many, many years. I love it when government is broke. Because when government is broke, they need us. When government is broke, they look for partners. When government is broke, we have a chance to work together. That's just been my experience. Could be wrong tomorrow, but today it's true. And the Kalihiwai Reservoir is a perfect example of that. It's simply responding from fear of cost. And my mother used to say, "Pride goeth before a fall." And you know, you're going to spend money to destroy it, or spend money to preserve it, repair it, and preserve it, and provide the water that's needed. The dollars are nearly the same. They're very nearly the same. You're not saving a ton of money to destroy it. It costs money to take these things out. It's not free. You don't just go in with a free bulldozer and knock everything down. You can't do it like that. So, I mean, we do have laws to prevent that. So
oh, yeah.
It's important to understand that you're going to spend money to take it out. You're going to spend money to keep it there. And in this particular case, what I'd like to see is the ability for community and government to truly have a public-private partnership in this example, and say, let's just look at this situation in a bit of an isolated fashion. In this case, this makes sense.
100%. And I, like, let's take your neck of the woods as an example, because it's a great opportunity. So
It's going away in Anahola. You know, that we're trying to get people on the land. Every single day, somebody says to me, we just need to get our Hawaiian people in houses. We need to get our Hawaiian people on the land. Well, you can't get them on the land if you don't have water. And if you take out the reservoir, you're not going to have water. Stop it. This is easy.
But like, if you look at North Shore, so look at it comprehensively too, right? So Kilauea Sugar goes out in 72.
Keala Nu'ukia, KKCR. O KKCR.
Sorry, Laura is learning a new board. I think that's what happened.
So all the old Kilauea infrastructure is what we're talking about right now. So Koloko to, yeah, Koloko, you got Marita, you got Pu'ukapele, Kalihiwai, Stone Dam, like all those things. and you have a lot state lands, you have large landowners, you have some Kolea that have flown over recently that are tremendously resourced. They have more money than the government, right? They got all this stuff. And everyone generally wants to do good. I haven't seen, you know, a necessarily evil person come in yet.
Just ignorant. You don't stop and learn about your own place. The same thing's true everywhere. If someone moves to a new place, you often don't give yourself time to really learn about that place before you get there or after you get there. You're just trying to survive. You're trying to figure out how to make a living. You're trying to, you know, have a place to live and da-da-da. You're not becoming a scholar, a student of that place. And yet, if you don't, you're very likely to make some mistakes that will impact that place. We don't live on Earth without impact.
No, I agree. But I think like recently, like if you look at migrations, right? So, and this is very broad in general, but Hawaiians came here for their reasons, and who really knows what that was? But it's like population pressure, right? Throughout Polynesia, you'll hit the shoreline sooner or later, and you got to move. You just gotta. So you look where the birds are, you look at the currents, and you're like, oh, there's probably islands up over there. So Hawaiians came. Survival. Then you had missionaries came. Let's say missionaries next. They came to save souls. Then you had immigrants to work. And then in the 70s, it was like you start to see the first migrations of people who were actually just choosing to come to Hawaii for like more abstract ideas. Like a lot of the people who came in 70s, the boomer generation from California, they came to live like a cool life, a good life. Like they were tend to be more mellow, a lot of surfers, the hippie culture. They had their kids here. They raised their kids. They invested in the community. They became part of the community, and it became very prominent, well-loved people. You got, North Shore alone, right? The Irons are famous. They came over as surfers, and they became the best in the world, without a doubt. And these guys are world famous. But when they're in Hanalei, they love and respect the Hamyungs. They love and respect the Mahuikis. You know what I mean? Like, these people are part of the community. And then we see people who are moving in now. Oh, my word. I mean, geez. Their net worth is more than small countries. And these are the people that I think instead of... And they're coming here because they like the place. I don't think they're coming here because they can afford to do the right thing. They're not coming here to get crazy. And a lot of... I know there's a lot of criticism online of some of these people, but a lot of you out there speak with, are friendly with, and work with, and ask these guys for money to do good projects, and they are very low-key, but they have shown up in the back with very humbly and facilitated a lot of the good work that has been done recently. So I think in your neck of the woods, where there's a lot of these, you know, individuals and organizations, you could do it. And when you're looking at government as an abstract entity and all this stuff, let's humanize it. We're in a democracy. Ultimately, it's the public. You know, if the community came, like Nadine, Representative Nakamura, Kauai has tremendous influence in the legislature right now. I mean, disproportionate amount. For our benefit.
Completely disproportionate, folks. In case you're not aware, the president of the Senate is a Kauai senator.
Senator Kochi, he's the man.
The majority leader who decides what bills go where, literally makes those decisions, is Representative Nakamura. But, I mean, yes. Yes.
Yeah, let me kiss some elemu right now. Thank you so much, all of you. We have, I mean, and there, we grew up with these people. Luke, you know, like,
yes,
he's heading the housing, Speaker Say's housing group, a D out in the West Side. What is she, majority whip now?
I don't want to. I think so, but I'm not sure.
Speak. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, And so if we in a democracy, ultimately it's the public's responsibility. That's why when people talk about, oh, this candidate and that candidate, hey, we elected them. You either voted for them or you didn't vote.
But either way, you elected them.
Yeah, in any event, it's our system. And that's why Churchill called it the worst system ever, except for every other one ever tried.
So we're on a good track right now. I just realized that we did not play the KKCR is not responsible for anything Makaala or Mauna Kea say. So she's gonna play that real quick, Mauna, because we forgot in the beginning,
and definitely.
We need to CYA a little bit. Okay, can you, Laura?
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Well, that takes care of that. Thank you, Laura.
Yeah. We'll apply that retroactively, too.
Yes, for whatever it was that we just said, like when I said it was stupid. But yes, and so... You know,
so I guess what I'm saying is that I think that as part of how changing how we look at the system, if your district, I don't know, what is it, 16 or whatever the North Shore court is. So we're talking north bank of Wailua River to Hyena. If the community came together, and I'm talking the whole community, and along with Earth Justice and along with OHA and DHHL, and they said, hey, you know, respectfully, Senator Kochi, Representative Nakamura, we want to work together and do this good thing with this reservoir so we can, consistent with the Constitution, support ag, with the Hawaii State Plan, with the Kauai General Plan, hey, Mayor Kawakami, Council Chair Raposo, all of whom I know personally, and they're good people. I don't agree with them all the time, but all these people, again, they putting themselves out there in the public eye. They're not getting paid much, and they're getting slammed every day in order to do what they think is good. And if we provide them a project and an opportunity to work with us, ultimately their bosses, they would gladly work with us. I don't know one politician who would say, no, I don't want to give what all of you want. That's exactly what they want to do. That's why they're there. You know, every 2 or 4 years, they ask us for the permission to work for us. And so I think in a democracy, as the public, as the Hawaiians, as the conservationists, let's not fight each other, man. Let's try work with each other on common projects of which there are many, and do good stuff.
Yeah, we're not a conflicting
purposes.
Maybe,
you know, we've been fighting since, let's say, 78, late 70s, right? Hawaiian Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we talked about Makahiki and you know, the time of Lona and time of Ku, and right now we're in the time of Ku, so it's about fighting. But maybe from at a large scale, let's work together for a little bit, because we're getting to that point where, man, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, 2024 is fixing up to be wild, and nothing lasts forever. And so, you know, I'm a huge sovereignty guy. I think that it's an inevitability, and my whole thing in speaking with, you know, getting these ideas out there, doing the work I've done, the work I intend to do, you know, chair of Malama Hulia, is to prepare for that inevitability. Of, you know, the United States, like England did before it, and like Greece and Rome did before it, it could very well and one day will end. And where does that leave us? It leaves us 2,500 miles from the West Coast, creeping 3/4 of an inch to Japan every year, right? We have to work together. Otherwise, you know, it can always get worse.
The canoe is the canoe too. So yep. Whatever, you know, as we increase in population, whether visitor count or resident count or whatever, as the pressures build, the challenges are becoming clear that our native natural resources, our land, our water, our food, our fish,
are going to be the test. That is the test. What are we doing? What can we do at this point to prepare for that period of time? Because I agree, it will come. It may come bloody and it may come not, but it's still going to come. And to be thoughtful now and to prepare, I want my progeny to say, well, at least she thought about it. You know, she talked about it. She thought about it. She tried to plan for us, the inevitable future generations. Because I do think that's our responsibility. Will we benefit? Of course we will. I mean, I'm not masochist. I'm not sacrificing, you know, much. I'm just trying to keep the bigger picture in mind. I'm learning how to use older ways of a place. And in this situation, the old ways of Hawaii. I'm learning to learn about those ways and to then apply those ways, those thinking thoughts and those ways to today's strategies to survive and to tomorrow's strategies to thrive. That's the point. The point of learning your history is the value of how it matters today or how it matters tomorrow. It's interesting because in this neck of the woods, the known history is fairly recent. You know, when you travel in places like Asia or Europe or whatever, and things are, you know, thousands of years old, you do get a different angle on it, you know. And they were smart way back then too. Look at what they did with water. Look at what they did with canals and aquifers and management and reservoirs and they moved water in the air. They built these huge, you know, water trough things. I can't think of the word. It's an ancient word.
Aqueducts.
Thank you. That's why there's two of us on this show, folks. I mean, they moved water above their heads. Because that was what needed to happen. You know, I can't imagine that something came from the stars and said, you really should put this over your head. You know, I mean, like you do it because it's what's called for. It's what's needed. It's what's going to help you survive. And they're marvels, right? And some of these earthen dams, if you look at the design, the original design, folks, not after it got all mucked up, but the original design of Koloko, that was a healthy little reservoir dam. That wasn't a bad thing. It was in the right place. It was doing the right job until somebody decided it should be something else. But it was a good little reservoir. It didn't do anything to anybody. It was really helping. And the same thing's true with Kalihiwai. We told the state, yeah, we can take that dam out, but guess what? It's always going to hold water. Because that's what it does. That's the place that it is. It's a gathering spot for water. I just want to see us use the smarts of them that came before us, and stop fighting over fear. You know, because that's what it is. That's what the DHHL thing is. That's what this whole Koloko thing hanging over our heads is. It's just fear. And
yeah, and it's very exactly. And I'll just say that, you know, the Hawaiian way is the Hawaiian way because this is Hawaii. So it's not like it's not some elite said I want it to be this way because I want it that way. No, this is the way it had to be. We got to get back into this idea that we're part of the environment too. And that we're not aliens, like we weren't plopped down here from space. Like this is what we do. We're part of the ecosystem. We're the, you know, a predator. We're a manager. We're all of it. And this was done to great effect in Mo'omomi. This was done in great effect in Haena. You know, if you look at the community-based subsistence fishery areas, like that's just the Hawaiian way, and everyone held hands and did it. And they still are doing it. And what Uncle Prescott's and Mac Poi Poi, what they're doing and what they recently did in Maui again. They're empowering each other and working with everything. That's what we need to do. And get away from this idea that, you know, the original sin was eating from the tree of knowledge. It's the hubris of thinking that we know what is good and what is evil. We don't know. We don't. But what we can do good things. Let's just perform via action. And you said something so correct. It takes so much money to decom these things because it's not just, you know, paying an excavator to go take out the wall so it can flow through. It's years of consultant work. It's years of millions of dollars of nerds like me clicking away at a computer. That's what so much of this the resources are. So let's redistribute that to farmers.
It seems to me it's almost more laws and more constraints and more restrictions and more rules and stuff in taking it out than there is in leaving it in if we just fix it. I mean, I've got that reservoir, you know, in on my desk. I mean, I know that one. And this is acknowledging when we need to learn from the past, acknowledging that we don't know it all for today, and pausing and saying, okay, well, it was there for a reason. I will tell you that in that whole community up there, Kalihiwai Mauka, people come, they buy because it's beautiful, and they're gone in 2 years once they learn that it rains. Yeah, it rains, folks. It rains a lot because the mountain. So if they don't know where they are, if you don't know where you are, then, you know, you're not going to succeed. I got some very good advice when we first moved up there, and that was don't plant anything. Don't plant anything. Sit with it for at least 2 or 3 years, 5 years if you can, and then plant what the place requires, what the place can support.
Yeah, I think that given with no constraints, just the whole island to yourself, the Hawaiians lived where you should live, you know? And we look at it now like, oh, that's a weird place to go. No, those are the best places to go. Because, like, there's no water up Kula, right? You have to be in certain areas. And there's not a lot of those types of places. And so we need to modify. We have to develop because at this point, Hawaii has been changed so much that this land and the water desperately needs managers who are going to clear the invasive species, who are going to make sure that everything is taken care of and brought back to a pono place. Because otherwise, if it's not, it's pilikia. It's just, yeah. You know,
oh, boy, you're good. You're very, very good. Ta-da-da. Okay, so thank you, folks, for listening to Pilikia o Pono. Mauna just put an exclamation point on that. We're so grateful to KKCR for the opportunity to have this conversation. We never get any callers. I think you're either asleep or you're really listening, which is really cool. We get some comments after the show sometimes, and we appreciate those, so please don't hesitate. And we thank you, Mauna Kea, for taking this bite out of your morning. We know that you're a working man, and wishing you well. And we'll work on. If you have ideas for next month, please let us know. We'd be very very happy to take your suggestions and work with them as best we can. Mahalo, Mauna. I appreciate it. Mahalo, Laura Christine, for what is it that you do? Is it called engineering? I'm not sure what it's called.
Yeah, pushing buttons.
Pushing buttons. Sometimes the wrong one.
Happy Valentine's Day. Producer credit.
Producer credit. She wants producer credit.
I don't.
So happy Valentine's Day.
And service to you.
Bless you, Hallmark, for inventing it. So
to make all the single people feel terrible.
Yeah, really. The heck with that nonsense. Just eat chocolate every day. Screw it. Okay. Thank you, folks, and we appreciate you. And we'll see you the second Wednesday of next month at 7 a.m. for Pilikia o Pono. Mahalo, Mauna.
Aloha, you guys. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Okay. Aloha.